Good morning, my name's Matt. I'm part of the leadership here at Maybridge. And if you are a guest, you're visiting, you're here in your first few times, let me add welcome. Wonderful to have you. We're spending a few weeks on a little Sunday series called Everything We've Got. And it's a lot, isn't it? And this is because at Maybridge we do something called partnership. And partnership is our way of saying, yes, I am committed to this family in this time and place. I'm on the journey with these people. And I always like to say, when we do a month like this every year, I always like to say, if you're a follower of Jesus, be committed to a church community somewhere. Doesn't have to be Maybridge. We are the best one. Doesn't have to be Maybridge. You're allowed to come and go, obviously, but please put roots down somewhere and get involved. And this series, this next few weeks, is about what following Jesus looks like for us in particular. And if you're here today, and maybe you wouldn't even call yourself a follower of Jesus at this stage, the hope is that you would hear a bit more about him and what a community built around him looks like and think, yes, I want a piece of that. I want to explore this more. We'd love that for you. So today, though, week one of three, we're talking about this word, serve. Nothing to do with tennis, but serving is one of those words that people use in church quite a lot. And people think, oh yes, serve, sounds like a great idea, sounds good. But what does it really mean? What does it actually look like? Now to explore this, we're going to look at a story about Jesus. And this is actually from the night before he dies. And it's very powerful because he knows that that's coming. And I don't know about you, but if I knew I was going to die tomorrow, I would not be thinking about serving. I'd be thinking about me very much. But here we find Jesus having a meal with his disciples, 12 closest followers, and he demonstrates what it is to serve in a way that it would not be an exaggeration to say has revolutionized the world. And this is from John's Gospel, it's an eyewitness account, and this is how it begins. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. Now focusing on what John the author is saying here, this is all one sentence, but it sounds like two things that are completely unrelated. Jesus knew the Father had put all things under his power, and he'd come from God and was returning to God. Jesus is epic. He has all the authority, all the power, he's preeminent, and this is really important. He knows that. He knows it. The humility of Jesus that we're going to see is not that he pretends to be powerless and useless. No, Jesus knows full well who he is, where he's from, and what his purpose is. But this same Jesus, in the same sentence, got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, meaning his robe, and wrapped a towel around his waist. In other words, he takes on the role of a slave. Only slaves would normally do this. Everybody who was in the room, including John who wrote this down, would have been completely confused. They'd have dropped their hummus, right? What's he doing? He's our teacher. He's the boss. We've come to believe that he's this special person. We think that he's God come to earth. Why is he gearing up to do what slaves do? Now, John wrote this down years after the event, at a point when he understood more of what was going on. But look at the way he constructs the sentence. It's like Jesus has all power, everything, so therefore he got ready to serve. That alone is the most incredible, radical, wonderful thing. In the ancient world, people believed in all sorts of gods, all sorts of funky ideas, but those gods didn't show up and serve. You served them. They wouldn't come into your life as anything like an equal, let alone do something for you. In this moment, Jesus is saying, yes, I'm God, but I'm the God that serves. And John, and many people who've become Christians since, have realized, and sometimes we can be complacent about this, God's nature is to serve. It's part of who he is. Yes, he's great and powerful and beyond us and should be worshipped and revered, absolutely. But he serves. He serves us. And so not only is Jesus the God who serves, comes down to earth, but he's also about to model to his disciples what real greatness is. Now, our world, you may have noticed, tells us that greatness is when you've got people that serve you. They work for you. They do stuff for you. You gain power and influence and control. And people revolve what they do around your wishes. That's greatness. But Jesus shows us that in the eyes of God, greatness is exactly the opposite of that. It's completely different. Here's what he does. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Now, why is Jesus doing this? This was certainly slaves' work to do this job. If you think about it, this is the Middle East. It was hot and dusty. People walked way more than they do now. They didn't have trainers. Socks and sandals were not cool even then, so people weren't doing that. So you just got sandals and then your feet. And so guess what? People tended to have dirty feet a lot of the time. And if you were a dinner guest and the head of the house had slaves, those slaves would probably be told to wash the feet of the guests. Nice for the guests, but not nice work. The slaves that did this job are the absolute bottom of the ladder. This is worse than preparing and serving food or clearing up dinner. Nobody wants this job. And Jesus is going around to all of the 12 guys with him and one by one washing their feet. This is completely unprecedented. In fact, it's quite awkward. He's their rabbi, their leader. This is not what's supposed to happen. The hierarchy has become upside down. Now, I don't think they'd have just carried on chatting about the weather or something while he's doing this. I think the room would have been stunned into silence. What are they supposed to do? Tell him to stop? Wash his feet? Say thank you? Join in and help? Nobody knows. But eventually someone says something. He came to Simon Peter and who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you'll understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." Now, Peter's question is not so much to ask whether Jesus is going to do it, because he's seen him go around the room. He definitely is. But it's more to say, is this a good idea? Is this appropriate? And that's why he says, "You're never going to wash my feet." Now, at first reading, it could seem like Peter's being really humble. Like he said, "Oh, Jesus, you can't wash my feet. I'm not worthy of that." It does sound humble, doesn't it? But it's not. What he's actually saying is, "I understand how things are meant to be. I understand reality better than you do, Jesus. I need to step in and define what should be done here." But Jesus knows that he's going to understand it later. And his answer is basically to say, "I need to serve you first for you to have any part with me." And again, this is a real reversal of how many of us have been programmed to see God. Religious people tend to think, "I'll do the right things, I'll serve, I'll be a good person. There's no rota that I'm not on." And Jesus says, "If I don't wash you, you've got no part with me." Now, Peter will go on in his life to do all sorts of fascinating and influential things. He became historically a very famous, influential figure, we know this. But every single part of what he does is completely and totally irrelevant if he's not first washed by Jesus. It's irrelevant. But look at what's happening here. Peter wants a relationship where it's on his own terms, where he maintains control. Why is he doing that? Well, because very often it's harder for humans in our pride to receive a humbling service from God than it is to perform what feels like a heroic service for God. We don't like this, but you have to start, Jesus says, you have to start here to have any part with him. Look at how the conversation develops. "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "Those who've had a bath," I say bath, you know what I mean, don't you? Most of you say bath, right? A bath, he had a bath, all right? "Not just my hands and feet, but my head as well." Jesus answered, "Those who've had a bath," because it is bath, need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you. Now it looks like Peter's got it a bit more. Okay, Jesus, if you're saying it's so bad that I need to do this, wash all of me, the whole body, and not just my feet, my head, my hands, the whole thing. But again, he's missing the point. He wants to dictate terms. First, he refuses to be served by Jesus, and then he tries to sort of manage how he's been served. And Jesus speaks into this, and we know what he means physically. If you've had a bath, and then earlier in the day, and then your feet get dirty, you don't need another bath. You just need to wash your feet again. But what does that mean spiritually? What's the point? All followers of Jesus need a bath at some point to be completely cleaned, to come to him with nothing but our brokenness and our sin, and in a sense be washed, to be cleaned fully all over. And once that's happened in your life, it doesn't need to be done again. That happens the moment you become a follower of Jesus. He cleans you spiritually. You're declared clean in the eyes of God forever. And that was absolutely radical. Nobody else taught that way. But then, as you go about life in a dusty, dirty world, you don't need another bath, but you do need the daily foot washing of coming to Jesus to admit where you've gone wrong and you need to be served by him to clean away the grime of the day. It's not a complete rewash. Once you've had the full spiritual hose down, you don't need it again and again. But Jesus says, back to the group that he was with, not everybody in the room with him is clean. They're not all clean. And John explains why. For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said that not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Now the text never mentions Judas by name, but that's who this is talking about, the person who later that same day would betray Jesus to the people who wanted to kill him. And it seems that Jesus' words about being washed are related to this. Not everybody in the room was clean because Judas wasn't. And that was not about physical bathing. He'd had that. It was because he now placed himself against Jesus. But think about this. Jesus still washes Judas's feet, even knowing what he's going to do in a few hours' time. Jesus willingly serves everyone, regardless of what they're like, regardless of how they treat him. And this is the model for us. It's easy, well, relatively easy to serve people you love, isn't it? The ones you get on with. What about the people who disappoint us or even hate us? That's the bar, that's the level Jesus is setting. And then when he finished, Jesus puts his robe back on and goes back to his chair, almost like nothing happened. But I wonder if that line is there to make it clear. Nobody did this for him. Nobody washed his feet. In that setting, Jesus has a lot to be concerned about, a lot to be stressed about, agitated by. It's still him that serves. It's still him that's thinking about other people. Everything that happens to him from that evening into the next day when he's crucified is him serving us. None of it is us serving him. But really helpfully, he teaches what this is all about. Do you understand what I've done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I've set you an example, and you should do as I've done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. Jesus says, call me teacher and Lord. And that's right, because I am that. I love this about Jesus. Nobody else in history comes along and says, you should call me teacher and Lord and washes people's feet. Nobody else does that. You might get people who do one of these things, maybe. Usually the first. But not both. And this is really important. Jesus does not lose or undermine his identity by serving. He fulfills it. It's not that he's lesser because he serves. It's actually because he's great, he serves. It's not humble to deny the truth. If Jesus said, well, I'm serving because I'm this really terrible, lowly person who deserves nothing, he'd be lying. But if you're wondering what God is like, this is the answer. God serves people. In God's estimation, greatness isn't in contradiction to suffering, to serving or competing with serving. Greatness is serving. That's what it looks like. But he doesn't stop there. He's really explicit that this is an example to follow. This is the only time in the whole Bible you find Jesus say this particular sentence. He says, I've set you an example that you should do as I've done for you. He only says that here. He doesn't want us to wriggle out of this in any way. We can't super spiritualize this. It's not to make us greater than him. A servant's not greater than a master. It's Jesus' way of saying, you cannot outgreat me because you can't outserve me. You're not going to do it. And that's okay. Only our pride and false humility will have a problem with him outserving us. We need him to be greater than us, to outserve us. And he is, and he does. So that's the passage. The God who remarkably and without precedent serves us. Here's a few reflections on what this means for being a partner at Maybridge. Firstly, you can't follow Jesus without letting him serve you first. Some of us in this room are more naturally servant-hearted people. We do things for people all the time, and you know, we're human, so there might be mixed motives. Maybe we want the credit, or we want to be in control. There's dangers, but it's a very good thing. The desire to serve other people, great thing. But following Jesus is not first about you serving. Jesus has no part with you if you don't let him serve you. Let him clean you up. It's as strong as that. And so we don't want to be a church where people think it's about obligation and duty and grudgingly doing things with no passion and enthusiasm. We don't want to be a church where it's superficial actions and putting on a polite face and pretending we've got it together. We want to be a church where we humbly let Jesus serve us first. We do because he first did for us. It must be that right way around. But also, it cannot stop there. You can't follow Jesus without serving other people. This is always the order. You can't serve without first being washed by Jesus, and you can't be washed by Jesus without then serving. It comes in that order, but there's no such thing as following Jesus without serving other people. If you don't serve, you've missed it. Now, people, you find these days, people like to talk about love. Especially in church, say, oh, it's all about love. You know, just we've got to love people. Let's just all love each other. Love, love, love. Brilliant. Feelings alone are not love. Serving is. Serving is love that actually means something. And so at Maybridge, we expect people who are church partners, who are committed here, to serve one another. And it takes, of course, it takes all sorts of forms. We're all in different circumstances. We've got different energy, different availability. And let me be really clear. If you're struggling or you're sick, that's the season when the rest of us serve you. It doesn't preclude you from being a partner. But in general, church partners here choose to serve other people. But let's also put it like this. If you don't serve, you implicitly say that you're greater than those who do. If you don't serve, but you let others serve, including serving you, and you let other people be on all the different teams, and you let other people look after your kids, and you let other people set the room up and lead worship and so on, you're saying, well, it's okay for you to serve me, but I'm not going to serve you. Jesus didn't see himself as being above serving. He saw it as the outworking of who he was. So who are we if we're not serving? We're not greater than the master. Third thing, you're needed here. Now, Maybridge is growing as a church, which is great. All three of our congregations on a Sunday have numerically grown in the last few years. We're starting to struggle for space in this service. We've got groups that go in the week. The building here is in use constantly. There's just loads of stuff that goes on. We need people to serve. We need everyone to serve. Over the last 100 years, there's been a common problem with churches in the Western world, where somehow we've got into this thing where people think that a certain small group does all of the work, sort of people at the top, and everybody else is kind of a punter. You just show up for a service, you feed off something that you like, and then everyone goes home. Churches do not grow in spiritual depth or in number when that happens, and you will not grow if you're part of that. Now, at Maybridge, it's really not that bad. Loads of people serve, and it's appreciated, and it's wonderful, and we can't do without that, and you're brilliant if you serve. But those that don't, maybe because you're new, in which case you've got a free pass, or maybe because you've checked out for some reason, we need you. You've got gifts and strengths. On one day, the God of the universe will ask you personally why you didn't serve in the local church that you gained something from. And you'll have to stand there in front of God, and he'll be resplendent and glorious, and you'll have to tell him that you were too busy watching the Great British Sewing Bee. We don't want that for you. So work out how to serve. Join a team. Look out for people who are new and talk to them. Show up for stuff. Be interested in what's going on with people. Cook for someone. Get on a rota. Give somebody some money anonymously. Clean their garden. Or even be the person that sits in the worst seats on a Sunday. It looks like loads of things. Of course it does. But get involved. If following Jesus never costs you anything, you're not serving. Finally, I just invite the band to come up while I'm saying these last things. In the last words of the passage, Jesus said, "Now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them." Now let me ask you a question. When Jesus washed the disciples' feet, do you think he enjoyed it? I think the answer is yes. I think Jesus enjoyed serving in that unusual way. I think he enjoyed doing small things for his followers before he went on to do the biggest thing for them all and for all of us on the cross. The world tries to tell us that serving people will make us unhappy, that the good life is the race to the top, having money and power and comfort. Jesus sees it differently. You'll be blessed by serving. In other words, it'll do you good. It'll bring you joy. Now, some of you might hear me say that and think, okay, hold on. I have served and it didn't bring me joy. I burned out. I hated it. So let me caveat, you'll be blessed by healthy serving. Healthy serving. Not overdoing it. Not doing it for recognition, not looking down on the people that don't do what you do, not being guilt-tripped by somebody. Healthy serving will bless you no end. Healthy serving doesn't make you miserable, it makes you joyful. And so if you're feeling a bit flat and lethargic as a follower of Jesus, think, oh, my faith's not very strong and I'm not feeling it, what do I do? It may be that you just need to serve in a new way. Don't over-spiritualize it, just crack on with it, just do it. It's really interesting how Jesus says this. It's not, well, you know, do a bunch of stuff that you hate and then God will feel better about you. It's not that at all. It's good for you to serve. Healthy serving flows out of the security of being loved completely by God who served you first. And that's what we want for partners at Maybridge, to find joy in serving. So as I close, how incredible that God is like this. How amazing that the person we follow and trust is the way that Jesus is in this passage. No other master serves us at all that we could go to in this life, let alone the way that we see that Jesus does in so many ways. So we'd love to you to commit to journeying with the God who serves here at Maybridge. And if you're thinking, yeah, I'm committed here, I've been here for a while, there are loads of ways to serve. We've got a little thing in the foyer of different ways that you can serve at the moment, different areas where we need some more help and support. Please have a look at that. Piero's going to be in the foyer afterwards as well if you want to chat with him about some specifics. Also, if you've been a partner here for a while, or you're new here, you're exploring it, you want to know more, there's a slide on the screen here. That's one about serving. You can click on that little QR code with your phone. This is the one point in the service you're allowed to have your phone now, by the way. You can do that. But also, if you want to become a church partner, you want to find out more what that means, again, there's a QR code there. And we'd love to speak to you, talk to you. We'd love to hear from you. No pressure at all. But we'd love you to join this church and be part of following the God that serves. That's why we're here. Do you want to join me in standing?